Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield, and joining me via phone, I welcome Anna Kostaris and Gail Liss. They're co-authors of The College Bound Organizer. Their mission is to empower students to successfully navigate the complicated and stressful college application process. They provide guidance and support for all college-bound students. They both live in New York, and I am very happy to have them. Welcome to 411 Teen.
Thank you, Dr. Liz, for inviting us to speak with you today.
Oh, the information you have, I'm sure, will be very valuable to students and their parents and anybody else. What was the impetus for you in writing this book?
Well, we actually thought about writing this book, and we found the need for this book after we experienced the process with our eldest children. Mm-hmm. My son and Gail's daughter were born 4 days apart, and although they attended different schools in different communities, Gail and I spoke often about the challenges of the college admissions process, and we talked about how our children were managing the demands of the process. And we were trying to find a way to appropriately be involved and help our children. So we realized that we needed to become educated on the process and really understand it. So we read many, many advice books. We spoke with our children's guidance counselors. We had the opportunity to hear admissions officers speak about the process at info sessions. And we reached out to friends and family members who'd already seen their children off to college. And we realized soon that, our house was just, the stress level was going through the roof. We couldn't help our students with their schoolwork or their applications, but we realized that one thing that we could do was to help them to stay organized so that they could meet the demands of their schoolwork and meet their deadlines and successfully apply to college.
Well, I read your book, and I think that you certainly accomplished everything that you set out for. I thought that it was very thorough. It was very user-friendly. I'm sure it was written for both parents and students and counselors or whoever else may be involved in the whole college application process. I thought it was just very well done.
That was our goal.
Okay. Well, you met it. Okay. were there any particular things that you learned from your experiences with your own children that you wanted to make sure you addressed?
Absolutely. After we did our research and after we went through the experience with our own children, the things that we came away with a very clear understanding of how to do were to help the students define themselves, mm-hmm. to identify the schools that fit their particular profile once they identified themselves and their interests and their needs, to stay on task and to meet deadlines, and to correctly submit all the components of their applications in a very well, carefully executed, correct manner. And so ultimately, the reason we wrote the book was to help students and parents accomplish those things that we really set out to help our own children do. And the book is organized chronologically in a way that starts from the beginning of the college application process, takes the students through search and through applications all the way through, hopefully, the receiving of the acceptance letter.
Well, let's look at getting into college. Planning for college can be one of the most exciting times in a young person's life. They're moving to the next level, a novel phase of life. But the college admission process can be an arduous task. I smile because I've been there and done that, so I know what you're talking about when you were sharing, you know, when your own children were starting that process. It can be tiring and confusing and exhilarating and exhausting all in one breath.
So absolutely.
I know. So on the average, what would you say, when do students formally start the process?
Well, the process for juniors should start probably at the beginning of the school year. That's the ideal time for them to begin the process. They should begin thinking about test prep with the hope of taking some or all of their standardized tests by the end of the school year. It's also an ideal time for them to start researching schools and planning their visits. At the beginning of senior year, students are going to be pulling together their applications, writing their essays, asking their teachers for recommendations, and maybe taking some additional testing, and finally submitting their applications.
What would you identify as the pressures or the stressors that students and their parents are experiencing? I mean, because I know there's so many steps. They do have to define themselves. I mean, and they have to identify the schools, and we will go into more of that in detail. But were there any overall stressors or pressures that you found that the students and their parents tend to experience at this time?
I think just managing everything that goes into applying to college. I mean, they have to manage deadlines, test prep, then testing. They have to attend college fairs, campus tours. They have to actually complete their applications, put together their resumes so they can fill out the activities section of the application, write their essays, and it's just not always one essay. Mm-hmm. Some schools require supplemental essays as well. Then they have to think about preparing for interviews, whether they be on campus or alumni interviews or possibly even reps coming to their high school. And then ultimately making decisions and completing all the paperwork, financial aid, and everything it takes to wrap up the application process. It's just a lot to manage,
right.
Especially for a team.
Right. The time management aspect of this is very difficult. And I think we feel that this is one place where parents really can help their students. It's a stressful process, as you said, for both the students and the parents, and it's difficult as a parent to watch your student and not feel like you want to dive right in and help them with things. And it's hard for a parent to identify where is an appropriate place for them to get involved. And some of this time management or just, you know, keeping a master calendar, whether it's for the tests, the test dates, the locations, when applications are due for not only colleges, but also maybe special programs within colleges or universities that they're applying to. So I think, you know, it all sort of falls under that time management umbrella.
Are there any particular types of support that you found to be most helpful? I mean, do you think there are things that the school could do that would be more beneficial at this time? You talked about how the parents could be supportive and helpful, but what about the schools? What have teens found to be most beneficial in helping them navigate this process?
Well, you know, the guidance counselor or college counselor at a school is really the main focal point for a student when it comes to the college application process. And we would encourage a student to get to know their college or guidance counselor, as best they can. Start as early as freshman year in high school. Make an appointment if the counselor doesn't reach out to them. Make an appointment and introduce themselves. Just get to know them. Let the counselor get to know the student so that when it does come time, say junior year, to come up with an appropriate list of schools to research and possibly visit, the counselor understands who this student is and how they can best help guide them. Because, picking a school shouldn't be just about the counselor looking at, let's say, their grades and saying, all right, here's a list of schools. You want an appropriate list that really matches who the student is. So I think, you know, the thing the student can do, and even a parent, encourage a student to really make use of their guidance counselor. They're a great resource. And I don't think every student knows to do that.
Well, we also think that it's a good idea for the parents to be involved and to get to know the counselor. And it is appropriate for the parents to attend some of these meetings with their students and the guidance counselor so that they're all on the same page and they can work together.
The standardized tests, and you touched on that, can often be a meltdown and create madness for everyone involved. Any recommendations that you make for parents or students in coping with the standardized tests? And what tests should they take? You know, that's rather controversial in itself.
Right. I mean, look, there's no denying that standardized testing, it's an important part of the process, but it's just one of many criteria used to evaluate the candidate. And I think it's the parents' job to make sure that the students keep that in perspective. I mean, first, I think they need to find out, you know, which tests are required by the students, by the schools that they're considering. Most schools today allow the students to submit either SAT or ACT scores. In addition to that, SAT subject test requirements vary from school to school. Some schools require one, some require two. There are some that even require three. And, of course, some require none at all. Then the students have to figure out which test is best for them. And the only way to do that is to take practice tests and compare their scores and see where they feel most comfortable and where they can be the most successful. The PSAT is also a good starting point. Mm-hmm. If a student decides to take the SAT, they should break it down, look at the sections, how they scored, and that's how they could figure out where they need to spend a little bit more time preparing. They should try to get their tests taken in junior year. That would be the ideal scenario. As far as the subject test, we recommend that they take the subject test when they are taking that same subject in school. So as soon as they finish the course, the material is still fresh in their head, and they can, you know, it's easier for them to prepare. The parents can help by keeping a master calendar of tests, test dates, and locations. They also need to print out registration slips and tickets. They should keep those in a handy, safe place, so on test morning, they're not scrambling to find, you know, the admission ticket.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And again, that goes right back to what you've said throughout our conversation, organization. And that's what I liked about your book. That's what I thought was so very effective, that it had a lot of organizational skills that were built into it. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen, and I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Joining me via phone is Anna Costars and Gail Liss. They are the authors of The College Bound Organizer, The Ultimate Guide to Successful College Application. And we have just been addressing that, what you need to do when you're getting ready to apply for college. One of the things that you mentioned early on is defining yourself. I want to ask you to elaborate a little bit more on how that potential college student defines themselves, things they may do that may help them in accomplishing this.
Well, I think that the student needs to think about what their interests are, what they've focused on in high school outside of the classroom, whether it's been a sport or a debate club, an extracurricular activity that involves community service. And they can write in an essay, you know, who they are, try and represent to admissions things that admissions can glean from, say, test scores and grades, and be consistent in their application. Write about an interest or an activity, and then when they list what activities they've been involved in on the common application, which is a required part of that application, make sure that
their essay reflects what activities they've been involved in and lists those in order of importance, so that they present an overall picture of themselves that the college admissions reps who read the applications can glean by seeing some consistency throughout that application. And we don't advocate, you know, a 17-year-old, you know, they haven't won a Nobel Prize. They haven't, you know, most of them haven't started a business. I think it's very intimidated that essay is this moment of truth where, you know, have I lived up to, you know, what a college expects from me. You can write an essay or represent that an activity that you've been involved in is something as simple but yet important as, you know, babysitting for your younger sibling. But, you know, represent that that's something you did with authenticity, with enthusiasm, you know, with dedication. And I think that that's what colleges want to understand when they look at an application. Who is this student? What are they bringing to our campus? In what way would they be a positive contribution to the community?
Well, I always say you want to paint a picture with words. So when they finish that application, reading that they have a picture of you and a feel for you. And just writing, you know, about what you enjoy, some of the things you've done or engaged in, that gives them a picture and a feel for you as an individual.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
I've heard a lot of college counselors say that colleges do not admit students. They admit the application. Would you agree with that?
I'm not sure. I think that they take an overall look, a holistic approach most schools do now to the applicant. I think they take into consideration all the things that Gail just talked about. I think they're trying to build a community, a balanced campus community, and they're looking for people to bring different perspectives to their community.
Indeed. I think so. I would agree with you on that. But I have heard a number of individuals and counselors say that it's really not, they're not admitting the student, they're admitting that application. But that application should be reflective of you. So, you know, I guess maybe that's where they're coming from, but I've just wondered how you felt about that. I always ask someone, how do you feel about that? What do you think? As far as applications and ID, let's look at the schools. How does one identify the schools to apply to? You know, I think about that student who may be the first to college. They don't have parents who may be able to pull their coat, so to speak, and give them additional information. So how should they go about school selection? What are the variables that they need to consider? Of course, I know money is always one of them, but what is important for them to consider?
There are many things to consider that will help a student narrow down their choices. I mean, first they need to think about what kind of college experience they're looking for. Do they want something that feels familiar, that's similar to their high school experience, or are they looking for something new? The size of the school is a very defining feature. Are they looking for a small school? Are they looking for a large university? They also have to think about the setting. Do they want to be in an urban setting, or do they want to be in the city, in a rural setting? Or maybe they want a little bit of both, and a suburban, small-town school might be better for them. Another thing is the school's focus. Do they want a liberal arts school, a school that's research and professional-oriented? And these are the types of things that they need to think about when they narrow down their choices.
Well, you know, the trials and tribulations of college admission involve, a roller coaster of emotional highs and lows, and they're all felt through this painful process of this application process. Does the process have to be so stressful? Do you have any clues or cues or things that anyone can do to make it less stressful?
You know, I think it, again, comes back to staying organized. The way to take the stress out of the process is to get a jump start on the process, stay one step ahead of what's coming next. And that's difficult to do if you are, as you say, you know, possibly the first in your family to go to college. But I think that reading and trying to stay current with what's going on around you in the process is the best way to stay ahead. So, you know, being in touch with a guidance counselor, reading books, our book, for example, we did arrange chronologically to make it easier so that a student or a parent could read and they could see what's coming next. So you don't get blindsided. If you know what you need to prepare for, you know, that takes stress out as well. So, you know, keeping track of information, using worksheets, using charts, staying organized and staying one step ahead, we think are really the best ways to eliminate as much stress as you can. Obviously, any process that involves uncertainties does, you know, is always going to be a bit stressful, but you know, if you can kind of take control and manage the process instead of letting it manage you, it it certainly eliminates some of that anxiety.
Right. I think allowing enough time to execute the application, to write the essay, allowing enough time to test prep, that all also helps to manage some of the stress inherent in the process. Also, tuning out some of the noise. There's always just the kids in junior and senior year. That's pretty much all they're talking about. There's a lot of information, misinformation. I think as parents, our job is to try to help the students filter through it, tune out some of the noise, and just stay focused on what they have to do. And also to keep things in perspective, that there's not just one school, perfect school for every student. There are many wonderful schools where students can have a great experience, thrive academically and socially, and be very, very happy.
Well, how many schools do you suggest one apply to?
We typically recommend about 10 schools, that they need a balanced list. We need safety, target, and reach schools. And, you know, around three each, three or four is really adequate. I think that's a manageable list too. That's what we typically work with.
Any comments you have on community college versus four-year institutions versus online learning?
No, community colleges offer students a wonderful opportunity to get started, typically closer to home, which many students are more comfortable with and maybe not ready to, you know, take that big step away from home. And it gives them a way to ease their way into the process. You know, they can be sure to find out that when they're ready to transfer into a larger college or university, that their credits are accepted. And it offers many students a great way to get started. Certainly a good option.
Okay. Your book, The College Bound Organizer, The Ultimate Guide for Successful College Application. Where can one purchase it? We've been talking and talking about it, and it dawned on me, well, what if someone wants to purchase this book? Where can they get it?
The book is available on Amazon, online, and in bookstores as well.
Okay, all right. One thing, there's a myriad of books out there on college admission. What would you identify as the distinguishing component of your book from others out there? And there are plenty of distinguishing components, and I say that in a very positive manner. I tell you, I can't say enough for your book. I just thought it was very well done.
Thank you.
Well, thank you.
We think there are many wonderful books out there. Mm-hmm. We think that there are wonderful guidebooks. There are prep books. There are many advisory books. But one of the reasons we wrote this book is because we realized there really wasn't a comprehensive organizer. And right. That's why we put this together, to take students from search all the way through admissions and ultimately making their decisions.
Okay. You talked about identifying the schools and possibly visiting them. Is that important that you visit? What if you visit or take a virtual visit, visit online? How do you feel about that type of introduction?
Well, you know, visiting online and taking virtual tours is a great way to get a feel for a college campus and to get a first look. Many students applying to college have never seen or been on a campus before, so that is a good way to start and to compare from one school to another. Actual campus visits are really the best way to get an up-close look at what's really going on at a college. And we think that, if possible, all students should try to schedule at least one school visit. And that doesn't necessarily require traveling. And, you know, if a student lives near a college, it's a great way to just understand what college feels like. Go on a tour, which is typically led by a current student and gives an opportunity to see the school through their eyes, and then to sign up for an information session, which is typically led by an admissions representative, and we'll have a question and answer period afterwards. And most students will not be able to visit every school
right.
on their list, but if possible and they can go on visits, it's a great thing to plan to visit a variety of schools to get a mm-hmm. sense of differences between large versus small schools, urban versus rural. And the point of these visits is really just to figure out what type of school would feel best and fit best for students.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, the process is just, you know, can often be just overwhelming for students. And they get there and they just don't know what they're looking at or what to look for. And could you share some of the things they need to look for when they're on this tour? What's important for them to consider? What are some of the questions that they need to ask on the tour so they get a better feel for the university or the college that they are visiting?
Well, I mean, when the students go on campus, I mean, they should do, as Gail suggested, the info session mm-hmm. And the tour with the students. But then they should spend some time walking around campus alone. They really should just look around and see what's going on. What does the school feel like? How do they feel when they're there? Mm. Does it feel comfortable? Should you go to the cafeteria? Have some, you know, sit down and have something to eat. Look around and see, what are the students doing? Are they laughing? Are they having fun? Are they studying while they're eating? Then go to the student center. See what the students are doing there. Look at the school newspaper. Look at the bulletin boards. That really gives them a sense of the school's personality. And we remember from when we walked around with our own children. You know, we would come home and they would say, I could see myself there. Or they would come home and say, no, mm-hmm. not for me. I mean, it's a feeling that they get. We also suggest that they take notes and photos. You know, all the kids have their phones now, and it's very easy to take photographs, because the second or third school visit, it's very hard to remember the details. And so the photos, you know, and the notes do help.
Yeah, that's true. After a while, those visits start running together.
They do.
They really do. They do. When you're looking at college, one thing that we really have not addressed is just the cost. And I know that varies, but there are loans out there and there are grants out there. How much, and maybe you really can't answer this as I'm asking, I think about it, should a student, do you feel they should rely on loans versus grants versus, I mean, do you want to graduate owing $200,000? I mean, should they have some limits on how far they should go, and how do they identify these limits?
Well, when a student's applying, you know, I think the most important thing is to have a family conversation mm-hmm. about, you know, what the finances will allow. So everyone in the family goes into this college process kind of being on the same page. But, you know, a student doesn't know when they apply what kind of financial aid they will be offered. So going back to coming up with a list that has safety, target, and reach schools, that would apply mm-hmm. to having schools in that category, both academically and financially.
I know what you are referring to when you say safety, target, and reach. But for the listening audience, let's define that so they have a clear feel for what you are referring to.
Of course. I think that a safety school is a school that a student feels academically, let's speak first, about that given their grades and given their test scores and given the typical profile or history of a student from their high school, that student has a fairly good chance of gaining acceptance to a school. So that would be a safety school.
Okay.
A target school would be, you know, a school where the student's chances of getting in based on all those parameters seem good. You know, there are no guarantees in college admissions. So while you think that you seem like a student feels that they're a good candidate for school, you know, that would be a target school, but, you know, no guarantees. So maybe that's more difficult or more competitive school to get into.
You're tuned in to 411 Teen. We're going to take a brief break and we'll continue the discussion on return.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
You're tuned in to 411 Teen, and this hour we have special guests, authors of the College Bound Organizer, The Ultimate Guide to Successful College Application, Anna Kostaris and Gail Liss. And they are giving us the ins and outs about college applications. Would you share some of the common mistakes that are made in this whole application process, whether it's not visiting schools or visiting too many or, you know, because I think that if people are aware of the common misturns or the common hiccups that they may experience, then that's a way that they can avoid them.
Yes, some of the common mistakes that students make.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they miss deadlines. That's one of the most most common mistakes the student. They miss deadlines, and a missed deadline can be a missed opportunity. I mean, college admissions deadlines are absolute. There is no wavering on those deadlines. So it's very important to get things in on time, especially if the student is applying to a special program. Another common mistake is that students don't check their email frequently. Email should be checked every day.
Okay.
Because often if information is missing, they will be notified via email. Another mistake is not following up with colleges to see if all the components of their application have been received. For example, my son, one particular school, I remember him calling to follow up, and they were missing his test scores. Requested again that they be sent from the testing center. Again, he called, test scores were missing. But if you think about these thousands and thousands of applications and the number of components of each application, it is very impressive at how efficiently the colleges actually do get through the process. So it is reasonable to expect that from time to time, things will be missing. Another thing that happens is not following up with the recommenders.
A lot of the recommendations from teachers are now submitted electronically,
yes.
And we have seen many instances where the teachers will put the recommendation together and they don't press send. And so those recommendations are missing. So many schools will not even consider an applicant until the file is complete. So if the student is not aware of an incomplete file, they may never even be examined by the admissions office. Those are some of the most, I think, basic mistakes that we see that people students make.
And one thing, and one easy mistake to avoid as well, is to make sure that students have a proofreader for their application.
Yes.
Schools' admissions reps have told us so many times about how simple typos that could be avoided. They copy and paste an essay from one application to the next and forget to change the name of the school that they were talking about, mm-hmm. or, you know, just simple grammatical errors as well. So we couldn't stress enough how important it is, you know, just to have a proofreader mm-hmm. for the essay and the application overall.
Another thing is, while the students are putting together their application to back up their work, the most frustrating thing is to put in hours and hours of work only to find that it hasn't been saved. The computer can crash, something can go wrong, get deleted by mistake.
Mm-hmm.
That's extremely frustrating.
Yes.
Students.
Those are all very valid points, and thanks for sharing them. And they're good points for the parents also and the counselors who are writing their letters of recommendation. And what about those unsolicited? They think maybe I can pad it if I add some more recommendations or, you know, an additional video or something. How do you feel about that in the application process?
You know, representatives have told us that more is not necessarily more. If
mm-hmm.
you consider how many applications representatives have to read through, and, you know, with all the work that's put in, even still, probably, you know, they're pressured to read quickly and to get through, and so it seems more important to put together a very well-executed application and not add to it unless there's something really significant that a supplementary material, for example, might be a music video mm-hmm. or an art portfolio. You know, something, a science research project, something that really speaks to a very special accomplishment or talent or skill that a student has. But only then, and then many schools have very specific requirements as to how those supplementary materials need to be submitted, and it's very important for an applicant to follow whatever those required rules are about submitting. As far as additional recommendations, you know, hopefully a student finds the required number of recommenders that the school asks for who can write really outstanding applications, write a recommendation about that student that really reflects they know them and think highly mm-hmm. of them. And an additional one, I don't think are appreciated by the school unless also they are speaking to something, some special relationship or some special activity that a student has gotten involved in that is outside of the purview of the required recommend.
Mm-hmm.
We suggest that if a student is considering providing additional information, that they run it by their guidance counselor or college counselor to see if they feel it's appropriate and if it would be beneficial to their application.
Okay. How important is it to know or have your major decided when you go to college? I've gotten this question several times. Several parents wanted me to cover this. Is it important that they know their major? Do they have to have their major decided when they enter college?
No, it's not important that they know. And I think the majority of students
don't
know.
Yeah.
And even students that think they do know often find themselves changing their decision once they're exploring courses. I mean, that's part of the college process. It's learning and growing and understanding more about yourself and where your interests lie, where you think you can be successful. That's why most students, I think, do not know in advance and don't have to know in advance what they'd like to major in.
Most schools do not require students to declare their majors until the second semester of their sophomore year. I mean, that being said, there are very particular programs that are, you know, for example, engineering programs at many schools where, you know, you do have to know because you're applying into a special school. You might not be choosing a subspecialty, but you do, you know, a student would have to know that they're applying to that very specific program.
Mm-hmm. So that
is a case where they do really have to know and be willing to commit to a very specific course of study.
Well, one thing we haven't talked about is failure to be admitted. When they get that letter and they are not admitted to the college that they have applied to, any suggestions as to how to cope with the failure and what parents can do in supporting their teen during this time? You know, because it's so that some of them feel like, you know, a total failure.
Oh, it's a very disappointing moment, especially if a student has decided that there is one particular school that is the school for them. But I think that the most important thing a parent can do or parents can do is to encourage their students to look at the rest of their list and to realize that there isn't only one perfect school where they can achieve their goals and where they can thrive. And while it is a disappointment, we've seen our own children as well as many children we've worked with, you know, kind of mourn the moment and then move on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, embrace whatever acceptances they get, go take a look again at those schools, try and get excited about what those schools offer, and make a decision because the odds are they will probably be happiest at many. They'll have many options, and it will work out. And you kind of have to just encourage them to move forward.
What about opting for the early admission decisions? How do you feel about that?
Well, early admissions does increase the chances of being accepted. I think that it's a good option if a student is absolutely certain that that is the school that they would like to attend. Because if admitted, they are bound to that decision.
Okay. Sometimes, and what we're seeing, this is occurring more and more, teens may choose to pursue an alternative route. They're unsure about their career choice. They might want to just chill or cool out for a while before they get into the rigors of academia. What is your advice for those students and the parents who know they want to go to college, but they don't want to go this year? Maybe they want to go in January of the following year or just take a whole year off. How do you feel about that, and what can they do in that year? Any suggestions?
Well, many students now seem to be choosing to take a gap year.
Mm-hmm.
A really excellent option is to actually apply along with their classmates if they're prepared to do so, and then ask a school that they've been admitted to give them the gap year, and they will join the following class. I know many students that have done that. And in that gap year, we know students that have chosen to travel with a group, per se, on an organized program where they may go to a foreign country and, you know, learn about the culture, help teach English. They might want to get involved in a community service project close to home. There are so many different things they can do. They might choose to take classes, not for credit, at another school because they're just looking for maybe some experience in coursework or classwork that they haven't had the opportunity to engage in yet, to see if maybe they want to commit to that going forward. So there are many students who either feel they're not ready, as you said, mm-hmm. to commit to college, and many students who might thrive at college but are just looking for an experience in between high school and college. And that seems to be a growing trend, and it seems to work well for many students.
What about that student? I have a couple more in these last few minutes. The waitlisted. Those who are waitlisted, how do you suggest they handle that if you've been waitlisted out of your top priority school?
The student who's waitlisted should still take a look at the acceptances and evaluate those choices because they will need to send in their deposit by the deadline.
Okay.
The thing is that it does require some immediate attention. There are four things that they need to do. They need to send a response card back to let them know that they are still interested to be in the school and would like to be considered. They should contact their admissions rep immediately by phone or email, or write them a note and express their continued interest in the school. And they can offer to provide additional information if necessary. They may want to reach out to people that they've talked to throughout the process at the school and let them know what's happened and see if there's any additional information they can provide them as well. And they should let their admissions rep, they should ask their guidance counselor to reach out to the admissions rep and express that the student is interested and committed and will attend if they are admitted to the school.
Okay.
And then if financial aid is an issue, they have to also make sure that that financial aid will be available to them if they're admitted from the wait list.
And with that financial aid often comes work or work study. And any suggestions in adapting and making that smooth transition, I guess, because we're talking about a transition from whatever, even if you're living at home and you're living at home and going to college, it's still a transition. It's still an adjustment that student is expected to make. They're in a different milieu. They're meeting different people. How do they make that leap smoothly?
Well, it is definitely a transition. Mm-hmm. I think all students that go away, especially this is probably the first time they've been away from home.
Right.
I think that it's important to keep in touch with their family and to feel that they can reach out if they're feeling a little overwhelmed. It's okay for them to feel a little bit frightened, perhaps, uncomfortable. All these emotions are natural. But they're going to be, joining a new community. They're going to be making new friends. You need to encourage the students to reach out, join clubs, finding ways to become engaged. If they're having any trouble, they can seek the advice of a counselor or an advisor on campus. Those services are available. And most students, just to let them know that it is natural to be feeling that way and that most students start to feel comfortable and get into the rhythm of managing their own time and their own responsibilities.
And I think we're in our last minute and a half, and I was going to pose the question about working. But when we think about working, it is all, again, in that whole transition and making that smooth transition. And the key, you have said all through this interview, is organization. So even if you're a student who is required to work, if you have your day and your studies, pardon me, organized, you should be able to do that very smoothly. Would you agree? And in addition, any closing remarks you'd like to make in the last 30 seconds?
Well, in regard to working, I think if a student
recognizes, unlike high school, the number of hours in a week when you're in college that you're actually in class are really very few. So as you said, if you stay organized, you go to class, you make yourself a schedule or keep a calendar so you know when your assignments are due, when your projects are due, and you will have an easier time balancing that with, say, the required hours for work-study, and should still have plenty of time to get engaged in the community as well.
Well, I want to say thank you. I appreciate you sharing all your expertise with me. To my listening audience, thanks for the privilege of your time and your ear. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Tune. Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Holyfield. Technical assistance was provided by Ken Smith. If you would like to participate in 411 Teen or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. 411 Teen archives are available as streaming audio and as downloads from WFSU.org. Check us out on Facebook.